right, hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Public Animal Number One, and, instead of the normal intro, let's just, why don't you introduce yourselves and start explaining what you guys just experienced.
My name's Adam Rousseau. First of all, I'd like to say thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Had a great time last time, and it's good to be back here. I'm not really sure what we just watched. We watched the Gigi. What's it called?
Hated.
The story of Gigi Allen and the murder junkies, and it was actually a pretty enjoyable movie. I was expecting to be more horrified than I was. It was sometimes hard to see what was exactly happening, so maybe that was...
It's a second-generation 15-year-old VHS.
But I kind of feel like that's the way to watch this movie.
Probably.
It's Todd Phillips, you should mention.
Todd Phillips.
And this voice of this other person?
I don't know why that's not listed on his, like, filmography. I feel like it's not...
I got a reason for that.
But... Todd Phillips, for those of you who don't know...
Well, wait, who are you?
I'm sorry.
Who are you? Yeah. We don't even know what's happening here.
My name is Brett Zorich, and this is my... I'm a first-timer on this show.
But really.
But he composed the song that we finally have
the brainchild. The theme song is man's brainchild. And so I think before we get too far in, I think we need a quick summary. Okay, so we just watched Hated, the story of Gigi Allen and the Murder Junkies. Now, explain to the good folks, for those of you, I've seen this movie a dozen or so times. It's kind of, you know, like reading the Bible for me a little bit. Reading the Bible is for some people, watching this film is for me. So if you guys can just kind of explain what the film is, what the film's about, and what you see as you watch this. You know, it's only a 54-minute documentary.
So Matt has it on VHS, which is the first point to make. So you put in the VHS, and it gives you the whole, like, FBI warning, the Interpol thing, and the frame moves up and down because it's, you know, a piece of tape physically rolling. And it's about it's a documentary by Todd Phillips, who later went on to become famous for, you know, The Hangover and
Road Trip, Old School.
Yeah,
it's less than an hour. It's about a man named Gigi Allen, whom getting a gray area as far as how to describe him, but I guess you'd say a punk rocker.
Yeah,
lead. He's kind of a force into himself. He had a bunch of other people that played with him, but it looked like more or less if you were a fan of Gigi, it was because of him, not the drummer, etc.
The drummer was equally as weird.
All those guys were pretty much.
But.
Yeah. And he performs naked throughout it. He eats his feces and throws it at people. What else did he do? Cut his chest. With razor blades.
He put, like, a hot dog in someone else's ass and then put it in his mouth.
Yes.
Oh, there was people defecating on him. And basically, he inspired some local, you know, there was, at least from this film, it only looked like the most he ever brought to a show was maybe 80, 90 people. It wasn't, like, throngs of people, maybe 100. Yeah. We're not talking about, for those at home who haven't seen it, we're not talking about a stadium full of people. We're talking about these little back alley clubs in New York. And then he frequently gets kicked out of them, arrested, and he throughout he talks about how much he hates everyone and everything. And then... at some point, the credits roll, and then we find out that he died in, what was it, 1993.
So this year was the Murder Junkies. That was the name of the backing band at the time of the documentary. This was the Murder Junkies, Gigi's 20th anniversary death tour, which I think is still happening.
So who do they have singing for them now?
I don't know. Does he do anything crazy, or is it just... I think, like, it's now just sort of, you know... play the music.
It went slightly into his childhood about how he's kind of a disenfranchised youth in Vermont. And that's basically bare bones summing up the film as far as...
As far as the plot actually goes.
I mean, Adam, is there anything you want to add to as far as, like, the summary of the film? For those who have not seen the film, listening
at home... You should pause this right now in Wikipedia or YouTube it so you get kind of at least a little bit of
background.
So that as we talk about it, You don't just zone out and go, I don't know what they're talking about. So just take a moment, pause, go to theinternet.com, and check it out, and then come back to this. We'll wait for you. We all have drinks.
Yeah, we're good. We're good.
Okay, we're back.
All right, we're back. So, Adam, anything you want to add to, as far as the spectacle of the film, as far as what we saw in terms of content, you know, I mean, it is an autobiography, I think. It is, you know, sort of, it is kind of your typical documentary format, I think you can say that, right?
Yeah, there was no real sort of story arc, though. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't begin in one place and then end in an unexpected, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was almost like G.G. Allen, a primer.
Yeah.
Would be the, the Viking portable G.G. Allen or something like that. You know, where it's just, you just get kind of the basic story and then he fucking died.
Which for both of us, not to speak for you, but that's helpful because I know of him just by reputation. I know what his face looks like, but I've actually seen him in action. So it was good. Yeah. It was like...
Well, I'd never heard of him until Matt introduced us to him.
Yeah, I think I should explain. I got this brilliant idea last year. Was it last year? No, it was 2011. Yeah, 2011, I got this brilliant idea because I realized that through my landline voicemail, I could download the voicemails people leave me as WAV files. Oh, and then convert them over to MP3s. And so I thought, God, wouldn't it be a great... Because I already have too much shit. Wouldn't it be a great Christmas present if people left messages on my voicemail doing, like, a cappella G.G. Allen songs?
You know, did anyone do it? I felt bad that I didn't do it. But I think I'm more inclined to do it now, though.
And no, no, it was actually Lori. And she actually didn't even sing a G.G. Allen song. She did what G.G. Allen singing Barry Manilow's I Write the Songs That the Whole World Sings would sound like on my voicemail, which was a lovely gesture. And she did it the morning of the 25th, you know. She did it Christmas morning, and it was a lovely gesture, but nobody did, you know, Needle and Cock Blues, Suck My Ass It Smells, Outlaw Scumfuck.
Why do you think
that is?
What's your best guess?
What's my best guess as to why people... I don't know. I think they're just repressed, maybe.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think it might just be they're repressed or they... You know,
the man got to them.
The man got to them. Or, well, you know, a couple of my friends, you know, my friend Murph was like, oh, you know, I saw on his Facebook through his Spotify, as soon as I put out the email, like, everybody, this is what I want for Christmas. I want you to give me the gift of singing. And he went on Spotify and tried, and I could see it, like, on my live feed.
Yeah.
You know, that little, like, weird stalker Facebook feed thing they got now. I saw what the songs he were listening to, and then he messaged me, he was like, dude, I just don't think I could sing any of these songs. Like, I just can't figure out, I tried, man, I really did. And I was like, oh, okay, but... Yeah, I didn't. So that was a very, very lonely and sad Christmas for me that year.
Not to transition here, but what about the idea that the man himself, as a topic, is way more interesting than his actual music?
I think so.
Which would be, you know, someone leaving it on your voicemail strips the interesting parts of G.G. Allen, which is him.
Well, not really.
Into the bare bones lyric. And actual whatever melody.
But I think, aren't you though invoking that that meaning symbolically? Like there's a guy who used to eat his own shit on stage. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna sing one
of his
songs.
Which is more important than the song. Well, that's more. It's the guy eating his own shit that becomes more important than what he sang about.
Yeah. So really, what we should do is just like take a dump in your
eat your own shit. Yeah. What I'm saying is, if you really love us, we will take a dump in your house and eat it.
I would, for your
Christmas, if that's it, because really, you see what I'm saying?
No, well, you know, and I thought I'd put those MP3s on my iPod, I'd be shuffling, I'd be driving somewhere.
You think
somewhere,
the guy wants you to put his music on an iPod? You think he'd be okay with that?
No, he would not be okay with that, but he's dead and he can't stop me at this point.
Well, but your friend's lack of interest did stop me.
Yes, I did. Or maybe they were just intimidated. Or if you've ever there's like snippets of his songs throughout the film.
Some of the songs weren't bad. Like when he was just playing an acoustic guitar, like they weren't horrible songs.
Well, and I think that's the thing too is that at the core there was quote something.
Yeah.
You know, to use the line from, my college, one of my favorite college English professors. Well, there's, you know, what makes something literature, what makes something art? Well, there's something there. There is something there to what he could do.
And that something is feces.
Well, it was more than just feces.
It was ejaculate as well. I'm just saying
it is ejaculate as well. But I'm saying is there is some nugget of musical ability, prowess. You know, Gigi started, his biography, he loved the Beach Boys. And that 7-inch single that I have sitting in my living room that's staring at you, love, Young Gigi with Hair, those are really kind of pop songs that are on that record. Even then, there's still a thing bit on the record about how he was getting kicked out of places, and the, I think, New Hampshire Liquor Control Board banned him from performing in the state because shit he was doing. And it wasn't even, he wasn't even, like, eating his own shit then.
Yeah.
But he would start fights, he would be crazy on stage.
Yeah. Where are they based?
They were, the Murray Junkies, at the end of Gigi's life, they were based out of New York City.
Okay.
You know, so they were a New York band. They were originally a Boston band. Mm. I think, and you would think, Boston isn't that much bigger than Pittsburgh. You know, you can only get shut down in so many places before nobody will book you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's the, even, you know, other dangerous music of that era, like Einstürzende and the Neubauten. You know, the one of the original, like, real industrial bands that really would use, like, jackhammers and saws and shit on stage. There's stories about how in the 80s, you know, every one of their shows would end when the venue would catch on fire. You know what I mean? Or something like that. Or they would run out of cinder blocks to jackhammer and somebody would just go after the wall. And at that point, the club owner would, you know, pull the plug and they'd never play in that city again. And so, and it became kind of a mystique. You know, like, you saw them? When did you see them? How was the show? How did it end? To the point where one of the guys in Neubauten, I read an interview with him in the early 2000s, where he's like moved beyond, they've moved beyond, you know, they're like an orchestral band and do all this other stuff, and they're a lot less violent and angry. And people will come up to them and be like, dude, see this scar on my arm? I got this at your show in Dusseldorf in 82. It was the greatest fucking thing. And they would just be like, oh, that's really cool. Yeah, yeah. Oh, when the sparks. Yeah, when the fire started. Oh, you got burned. Oh, well, you had a good time, though?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I don't want to beat a dead horse. I feel like I'm coming at it from a musician standpoint. Like, that's all well and good. Like, I always would love to have friends that have great stories about, like, jackhammering a hole in the wall or something, or
yeah.
we have a certain friend who shall remain unnamed who gets shit-faced and eats anything you put in front of him, and like that's hilarious. And,
yeah.
and just like the gentleman in the documentary said, it is funny that a grown man is running around naked eating his own shit.
Yes,
it's hilarious. Granted, however, at the end of the day, like, does anyone remember what song they were playing when someone jackhammered through the wall? Does anyone know what song he was playing when he did X, Y, Z? Like, it becomes about the performance. And I'm not saying that's bad or good, but I just want to call a spade a spade. It becomes more about the performance than the content of the song, which is okay.
Yeah.
But from a musician's standpoint, I want to make sure that those two things aren't confused.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to come off as being like, I love this song. This is the one where you shit in someone's mouth. Which is like, no, you love the performance.
And
of that.
For Gigi, the shit was when the X-Lax kicked in.
Sure. He was not strategically waiting until the crescendo of the third chorus.
Of Fight It When You Scum, right. That he did it. So, which is a weird thing, because he's punk rock, but that spectacle is very Kiss.
Right,
you
so
know,
I would,
and Kiss
I
was,
word, I
yeah,
the word punk, year,
yeah.
Year.
It's funny because I was just thinking about Kiss because I was thinking about the idea of zero substance and like all theatrics. Yeah.
Exactly, and with Kiss, it's the same thing. You don't, other than the two or three hits. Well, I'm not a huge Kiss guy, but in general, you don't remember the song. You just remember, this is the one where blah blah.
Well,
blah,
where
blah.
Gene spits fire
yeah.
or whatever, and so yeah, I mean,
but
it's not about the song; it's about, you know,
but isn't, I guess my question
shit,
is like that, for somebody who has such a, I forget what the term was, something about whatever Gacy said about him having a big social brain or something.
What he does, you know, that it is some kind of social commentary.
Right.
Yeah. That's the difference between that and Kiss, is Kiss, there's no statement there. It's right. just, well, this, they're just making money, basically. Right. That's all they're doing. And this is the total opposite of that.
It is, but I guess the only thing I would say is, like, I'm afraid that it's completely context-based, which is why I felt the need to summarize this entire documentary for anyone listening.
Oh, absolutely. Because, not everybody's seen
I'm
it.
Like, yeah, like, I'm like a song that's really moving where you need no context. You just put it on. You've never heard it. You don't know who it
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
And in 3.5 minutes, it takes you somewhere.
Yeah.
Unlike that, is important as the social commentary might be, you really need a lot of context and a lot of padding, both before and after, to really get a sense of what the guy's about.
Yeah.
And I think that says something. I don't know if it means... I'm not going to say better or worse. From a songwriter, I think it's a weaker form, just myself. Yeah. But there are other people that who enjoy the spectacle of it that might yeah. think it's
which,
more
important. And don't forget, too, I mean, we're watching a documentary, again, by Todd Phillips, and we need to talk about Todd Phillips and his career after this documentary in a minute. But, you know, so it is about, you know, if it's a documentary, it's about spectacle. But I will say, I mean, you do listen to the soundtrack. I mean, I have the soundtrack. I have the album Res Erected, get it? Res Erected, get it? Erection, res. Mm-hmm. And he's jumping out of the grave. I got Hated in the Nation, Gigi and the Jabbers. I got other stuff. There are genuinely good, enjoyable, moving Gigi Allin songs. That I like, I would want to listen to.
I'm amazed that he found the focus to be able to get into the studio right. and fucking put
and
anything
remember
down.
Remember lyrics and like remember. Oh, here comes the chorus.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine a band practice working on like working through the actual parts with him.
I have enough difficult time remembering where the bridge comes in a song without having like a brick shoved in my ass.
Yeah, which again, I mean, you think he did this maybe from about 1980 until he died in 1993. And so, I mean, there's kind of a core of Gigi Allin's songs that you just kind of like. I mean, it's almost like, you know, Pink Floyd, you just repackage it every 5 years as a new greatest hits collection. Yeah. And it becomes a number one CD because everybody's got to get. So in a way, it's not like he was like, oh, we got to work on some new material. You know, that was the other thing, I think. I mean, there were Gigi Allin albums in the early 80s.
Yeah.
But at some point, I think, in his arc, if you want to talk about his creative arc, it was like, no, we're not fucking writing songs anymore. We're just going to play the 15 or whatever.
Yeah.
And again, if you're not going to plan on really finishing a show and you're not really going to plan on finishing a tour, mm-hmm. how many songs do you really need to know?
Yeah.
You know, it is maybe part of it.
Really so then it takes an even further backseat. You know, right. we're already talking about the music being secondary. Right. And then when it's not even important enough to, like, have a fucking repertoire of songs
exactly
or even
saying.
Write new stuff because it's only about the mayhem.
Then it's pragmatism. You're like, well, technically speaking...
And we don't know that. I mean, we're putting words
sure,
in his
that,
or
that's
or
our advantage of not having overdosed.
Yeah.
We've earned that.
Yes, and I should explain, yeah, Gigi Allin died of an overdose in 93. Yeah. The weird thing about it is...
Wait, did that happen before he set the show where he was going to kill himself?
After.
Oh, so he didn't, kill himself at the show where he was all...
And there were at least two instances where he said, this night I'm going to do it, this night I'm going to do it.
And but you should also mention, people called him out on it, if I say people, whatever, the Austin... whatever that newspaper was. And
Boston.
He specifically went back and was like, these guys don't know what they're talking about. This is going to happen.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, I don't cry wolf is what he was
you
saying.
Don't cry... Well, you know, and
but
again...
He
yeah.
cried wolf.
He cried wolf or he got arrested or, you know...
You can't kill yourself in jail.
Well, one of the things I will say, though, is, yeah, you can't kill yourself in jail or at least you'd be put
absolutely.
Under suicide watch. Mm-hmm. But that was a thing that a lot of times doing a little web research... He would get arrested or the police would just, you know, shut the show down immediately on the nights that he said, this is going to be the night I do it.
All right.
That night, you know, would be a raid
That, that's kind of sketchy. I mean, he went 2 years after that because I think he said 1990 was when he
there was 90, then there was 92, and then he OD'd in 93.
So, I mean, you got
I feel like if he was going to do it, he wouldn't announce it ahead of time because that seems... I mean, clearly I don't know that much about the guy, but, you know, it, to have him come out and say, I'm going to do this then, that seems almost like too much structure for him to plan something like that.
In the future, yeah.
I think
you know, he said he doesn't give a fuck about tomorrow, it's today.
I think,
you know?
it fits so, in the pattern of spectacle versus substance. It's like, you know, it's really easy to announce that and have that anticipation. You can have anticipation for 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
You can only have the actual moment once.
Yeah.
You know, and once it's over, that's it. There's no more anticipation.
Yeah.
You lose. So just as far as a purely performance art, quote unquote, which I guess you're the
Gigi scholar
question. But I'd like to know to what extent any of you guys feel as though he was a performance artist, quote, versus, you know, they mentioned he died like a rock star. Like, to what extent is he a rocker? To what extent is he a performance artist? Like, you know, do the two overlap? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think so. But, you know, he wasn't the first, you know, because we talk about Kiss and all these other
Laurie Anderson.
That, you know.
Well, how about Yoko Ono?
When you get into it,
as far as like, you know, she was the one that would say, everyone in the audience come up and cut a piece of clothing off of me, which was what that reminded me of when he's like, everyone else chuck a piece of... Now, she wasn't violent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But other than the violence, like, as far as like not being able to sing and like have a substance that's more important than the song.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like anti-art, I guess.
Yeah. Which, I mean, isn't that what punk in its purest form sort of was?
Yeah.
You know, you think, like, what punk is now, it's, you know...
Well, that's the thing, is, like, punk can't be punk anymore because it's
too
all
established,
been done.
It's too clean, it's too...
I mean, at the time, it was rebellious because of just the nature of the music, you know, the power chords and the really simplistic...
Yeah. Well, and you think, I mean, you know, the Sex Pistols, I mean, if you want to go all the way back to the genesis of punk, I mean, the Sex Pistols... You know, they had to do the Spots tour in 77. They couldn't announce that they were playing. It was the Sex Pistols on tour. Get it? Spots, you know. They couldn't put up flyers to say, we're the Sex Pistols and we're playing Birmingham, August, whatever. It was illegal. It was banned. There was, you know, they weren't allowed to go. I know they weren't allowed to go to Ireland because of the song Bodies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a great one, the Johnny Rotten TV show. This is a sidebar story. There's a great shot when Johnny Rotten had that brief show on VH1 where Gabriel Byrne was like, oh, I saw you in Dublin in 19... And he's like, we never played Dublin. It was illegal. We couldn't get our passport to go over. You know, I mean, you think, like, when the Sex Pistols, when God Save the Queen was the number one song, there was no number one on the BBC. That it was a top 10 to 2 countdown. You know, so the BBC, like government radio, banned so there was no number one song that week.
But you know, it's an interesting...
And so there was a time when punk was like really dangerous, really countercultural, really kind of scary.
Yeah.
But so you're talking about a number one song here. What we're talking about watching that, there's like 180 dudes in a club. Like, at one time. I mean, and it kind of goes back to what you were talking about, how your friends didn't, not too many of them left the message. It's like...
One! Neither of you two!
Correct. But my point is, the guy, for all of his bluster, was not that popular. And when I say popular, I don't mean popular in, like, stick it to the man way. I mean, he was not even that...
No.
He wasn't even... He didn't even have enough infamy. You know, at least the Sex Pistols... It was illegal for them to go to Ireland. That's an entire country.
Yeah.
This guy just gets kicked out of a shitty bar in Soho. Like, okay, I can get kicked out of a bar in Soho. Give me 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but also, there's a little bit of a difference, too, because, I mean, Gigi Allen, I don't think he cared. It didn't matter to him. The Sex Pistols, that was a calculated thing.
Absolutely.
Like Malcolm McLaren or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that his name?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, he put that whole thing together with this idea of we're going to engineer this movement type thing.
Absolutely.
And Gigi Allen is just like, I don't give a fuck if there's anybody there or not.
Yeah, which,
you know, so which is actually more punk, I guess.
Which, and I will say, you know, this part of the dirty trick of what I've done to you guys. The first ever academic presentation I ever gave at a conference was about Gigi Allen. So that's how I got my gateway to academia was talking about G.G. Allen.
Gateway drug.
That was my gateway drug.
He was your
drug.
Marijuana.
Yeah, he was
now
my
you're like huffing spray paint.
Yes.
Metaphorically.
Yes. And that was very much the question of my paper that I asked that I didn't really answer. I just kind of explicated on the question.
Yeah.
Was, you know, how far can you take nihilism? I mean, if his whole thing was nihilism, and we can get into his, you know, recording, we can get into whether or not, you know, when he did release videos or whatever, you know, or albums or whatever, if he was actually even involved in their release or saw any money or anything like that. But it's this question of how he almost kind of made something out of nihilism. About absolutely not giving a fuck becomes then suddenly something.
He answered your question by not killing himself when he said he was. Because the limit to nihilism is you place a value on life over death. Not of your own life. Because otherwise, as Bill Maher said in Religious, when they were, not that nihilists believe in heaven, but all these people say, oh, I believe I'm going to a better place. And Bill Maher said, then why don't you kill yourself? If you really believe you're going. So a nihilist who says, I believe in nothing, I don't think there's any, I have no value system whatsoever. The answer is, well, did you wake up and throw yourself off a bridge? No. Then you value your current state over the state of death. Now, here's a guy who talks about October 31st, I'm going to kill myself, blah, 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 and doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. So the limit to nihilism is self-preservation to the extent, not hitting yourself in the microphone or...
Yeah, which is the thing, I would explain, the thing he would do is, yeah, he would bash his forehead with a microphone and
cutting himself with razors.
Yeah.
But the limit to nihilism is why he even somehow in his gut knew, because he talked about how he was going to so often kill himself, and did. So the limit to nihilism is that self-preservation, is, as far as the ultimate, quote, sacrifice, is going to get to the better of all nihilism. Because at the end of the day, you're choosing a state of existence over non-existence.
Yeah. But you're already in that state, so it's like to cross over to non-existence takes effort.
Well, but in the same way, it takes effort to take X-lax. Like, to take X-lax to shit, that's like a plan.
Yeah.
Like, you have to, I gotta get some, you have a tattoo. You know, that's like, I want to say something tomorrow with this. There is a sense of, like, there's going to be a tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm trying to make a statement so that those in front... And, you know, even though he's saying, I don't give a shit, at the end of the day, the guy is getting tattoos that are supposed to be there tomorrow. He's taking X-lax. He's trying not to get busted by the cops. Like, you know, he's not a nihilist to the point where he's like, I don't care if I'm in jail. It's like, you do. Because you just scooted out so you could get to your show tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, like, there's no such thing as, quote, pure nihilism. So now, once... it's degrees. So once you're like, I've accepted the fact that I'm going to die a broke/broken human being, to what extent do I care? You know, his answer is very little, obviously, but still enough that it's not nihilism.
And you think there's also then, I mean, his appetites for drugs, for being outrageous.
Maybe?
No.
Well, John Wayne Gacy.
But again,
that
I think
was weird. That was
weird.
One part that really
kind of
weirded me out.
That while I get a drink. Go ahead and explain that.
So he became friends with John Wayne Gacy, I guess, while he was in jail. Like, he would write to him and go visit him. And
I mean, I'm friends with Rainbow Man. Roland Stewart, the guy who used to have the John 3:16 sign at football games and stuff at the Super Bowl, and he'd have a big rainbow wig in the 80s and early 90s. I write him in prison.
What did he go to jail for, though?
Oh, he took hostages for Jesus.
Oh, well, but he wasn't a mass murderer of
teenage boys.
Like, that's...
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's a little bit much. that was the part of the movie I was like, really? Maybe I... Because I was kind of on board for a while. I was like, you know what? I kind of like this guy's whole just... You know, his character reminded me of, like, the Joker from The Dark Knight. You know, just... I want to introduce anarchy into society to make people realize like what we, what you real, the dark side that you don't want to see. Like, yes. You don't want to realize how fucking shitty and disgusting people can be. And yes. I'm going to throw that in your face.
Which absolutely and I was very much
yeah.
my, I think, you just described my appeal, of my appeal to G.G. Allen.
Yeah, that's
like my, was, like, oh shit, I love this.
I was into that. And then when they start talking about, oh, he was going to see John Wayne Gacy, I'm like, well, wait a minute, that, now, don't like, maybe this guy's just, like, severely mentally
ill. I'm into little boys. Don't get me wrong. Like, I hear that.
Oh.
This is Adam Rousseau speaking.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ. No.
Well, the fucking NSA is listening to this shit, so now I'm going to have to deal with that, those repercussions.
Yeah,
well,
we're all fucked.
Let me, before we get off to, I had a quick thought that I'd like to run by you gentlemen.
Okay. So, but you're the host now, by the way. I didn't realize. Like, well, I've had a podcast hijacked, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's...
At least not like in a band or something.
A lot far. So we...
ow!
Terrorism. So, we... no. Here's my question. So it's difficult with him to... When you just watch a documentary, you don't know anything about him. For me, my immediate reaction is to start thinking in analogies, because this is the only thing I've ever seen of, whereas I've seen lots of other... Yeah. So I start thinking, oh, is he like this or like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
did Dig come to mind? Because I started thinking about that.
Correct. So to the extent that that's an unfair thing to do to anyone,
yeah.
That being aside...
Okay.
I thought about the Haight-Ashbury scene in the flower power, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, kind of, because they brought it up when he died. They said he ended up dying like a rock star, is what I paraphrased, but something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about how the Haight-Ashbury scene and how legendary it is for my father's generation, the baby boomers, and how the entire scene was based around one idea, which was love, quote, love, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So no
like
war,
a good situation.
No war, just love. And to a large extent, you know, maybe you know some of the hits from like Buffalo Springfield and one hit by Janis Joplin, who never had another one, written by Kris Kristofferson, or Jefferson Airplane. But there, a large amount of bands made their say. Or made their mark by simply being love bands. I don't know what you call them. There was a scene. There was a bunch of people who followed them around. They didn't have jobs. They just decided, I this world isn't for me. I'm just gonna hang around and dance and do acid. And love is the answer. And those people eventually either A, died, or B, became the man. More or less.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a couple exceptions.
Yeah.
Well, when I saw this. And we're talking late 80s. What you saw is the same exact thing, but now the answer is hate. It's not love anymore. Now it's still people giving up their possessions.
Yeah.
Still people not showering.
Well,
still people not,
Gigi, basically.
Well, but he had... I'm sorry. He had a lot of fans who they said, well, they would kill themselves if they...
Yeah,
had
I mean,
follow.
There were people who... Yeah, right. I mean,
so
he had a follow.
So who would give up their possessions. They said they're disenfranchised youth who can't get a job or don't want a job or whatever. But now the answer is... Well, now it's about hate as opposed to love. And I guess my point is it not just that every so often, I don't know, some sort of cycle, I'm not a sociologist, but there's enough disenfranchised people who are not happy with the world that are so interested in seeing the world boiled down into some sort of
basic
binary,
yes.
binary yeah. dynamic or value... That someone stands up there, and in the case of the Haight-Ashbury, it's all flowers and love. Or in the case of him, just getting naked and punching people in the face. But some sort of raw emotion, some sort of raw emotion that they can cling on to and say, now that's real, goddammit, and I won't take anything less than that, and this is what it's about. And then, and I guess the irony here is, as Todd Phillips pointed out, is how did Hendrix end up? How did Joplin end up? How did he end up? They all end up in a fucking face pool of their own vomit after overdosing. So who gives a shit if it's hate or love?
Well, that's the ultimate nihilistic.
That's
you are the ultimate nihilist.
Yeah, no, you fucking...
Am I wrong?
Yeah.
No.
Well, it doesn't matter. As soon as you boil anything down to one emotion and have people follow you, and say this is the answer, and everyone gives up their possessions and says, oh, this is the real truth because I've never heard this before, at the end of the day, you end up fucking putting too many chemicals in your body and dropping dead. So who gives a shit?
Well, I think people are seeking the same thing.
Right.
And but they just don't know which direction to go, obviously. Right.
Yeah. But
and
there is, what I'm saying is, but it doesn't matter
how I thought it was interesting they're asking the drummer, though, about, like, what is Gigi? And he was saying, he was talking about, like, peace. Didn't he mention that specifically? Yeah. He's like,
Gigi's. We have too much hatred, not
we have too sweetness. Much hatred and violence, and that's what Gigi's act is trying to show.
Is what? Huh? Trying to show?
Is Gigi's act.
Act. That, yeah. I thought that was an interesting. I'm with you. That's exactly. I'm just saying he said act.
Yeah.
And I was just interested because he knows him or he knew him in a way that was not just.
Yeah.
So I'm just. I mean, he. You know, the guy was clearly a space cadet, but I wonder to what extent he used that word deliberately.
Two things I'll say about that. One is from stuff I have seen and heard and read about Gigi's mother. That, yeah, there was Gigi and then there was Kevin. And he would go up to visit her and then he would stop being Gigi and he'd go back to being Kevin and her being her son. The other thing is one of the things Dino, the naked drummer, who was the drummer for the Murder Junkies, who I think is still the drummer for the Murder Junkies, said about how one of the things is after it was over, they would spend the rest of the night laughing that people paid $15 to see him and then left after three songs.
So Gigi ever laughed?
Yeah. You know, but I think the thing that I want to say, and part of maybe, again, the appeal to me and why I've seen this documentary a dozen times and I have to share it with friends, I think there's something, though, to be said for extreme people, extreme ideas, and extreme personalities.
Sure.
Because I think, again, you know, I and especially this era that we live in now, where I think people are so personally restrained, and I think there's just this profound sense of irony and this profound sense of, oh, look at that stupid person over there. Thank you, Internet, for giving us all of that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to tweet wrong. I could be retweeted, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
That, so many people sort of internalize that. I think it's just interesting to have a world of people who, or look at people who are at least in some way kind of extreme, kind of weird, people who love, 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 or hate, 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 or
but don't you think
whatever the fuck they're into.
It's telling to be Dinosaur Jr. or the guy who all of them said, and he summed it up better than I did.
And
he
basically, who are we talking,
the guy with the glasses.
Oh, Unk. There's a throughout the documentary. There's a fan named Unk who's sort of the Gigi Allin super fan, who they review for perspective.
I wish they had talked to more people.
Right.
Yeah.
Why was the documentary so short? I wonder. Like, I feel like they probably had just a lot
money financing. Anything I've read, that's part of it. It was his first documentary.
I feel like they must have had a lot more footage that they just was unusable.
Put Will Ferrell as Gigi Allin.
Yeah. Well,
we're getting off track here. Okay. My initial point was that he was the person, and you mentioned the gentleman from Dinosaur Jr., whatever it is.
Jay Maskus.
Who played with him and said he stood off to the stage.
Yeah, because the backstory of that is, you can find it on YouTube. There's a video of Jay Maskus talking about what it was like. Somebody asked him what it was like to play with Gigi Allin, and he thought all of the thing about Gigi getting in the fights, Gigi being naked, Gigi shitting and pissing on stage, Gigi doing whatever. He thought those were just sort of legendary stories, and maybe there was a night where it went bad, or there was a night something weird happened.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, this guy's just in a band, and he sings. And
well, I guess there was no internet at that time.
There was no internet at that time.
You would think you would be able to verify that information before joining the band.
No, which
Didi Ramone.
Ask Didi Ramone. Yeah. Again, there was that idea things can be genuinely known but generally underground.
But here we go.
You know, I used to send a new Bouton.
Here's what
never
I'm saying.
Played.
The
Misfits used to only play on Halloween. Like,
really?
Literally, there was a time in the 80s when the Misfits had one show a year. And it was a thing, it was a badge of honor if people actually saw it. Oh my God! You know, there's a thing in the Henry Rollins tour journal for "Get in the Van," which when you all, I mean, that's another great companion piece to this. If you've ever seen read his journal or the spoken word album he made out of it about what punk rock was like in the 80s and how violent it was and how weird it was, and there's stuff like Henry Rollins saying one night this guy just decided that he was going to try to put a cigar out on his legs while they were performing, and it was not uncommon for Henry Rollins to have to punch people in the face with a microphone, and you know, or break up fights or keep skinheads from killing a metal guy.
He had to punch someone in the face, but he also had to break up fights. I don't know what
that is. Yeah, well, it was both. I mean, it was the shows were violent.
Sure.
It was a violent thing.
Stop.
But what I'm saying is that there was this time, this era when, you know, just to be that extreme, but also to not have everything immediately accessible. And how that becomes sort of legendary.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of, you know, if you want to talk Mystique, or if you want to talk, you know, the Brian Eno defense of the Velvet Underground. You know, because somebody would say, well, how could the Velvet Underground only, you know, be so seminal and important? They only sold like 100 records. And he said, yeah, but everybody who bought one went out and started a thing. Yeah.
You know,
I think there's something to be said for that pre-internet world where shit really wasn't always immediately accessible.
Yeah. Do you think G.G. Allin could then happen today? Somebody like that could happen today? Or would it just be like one, it'd be one fucking YouTube video and then it would be forgotten immediately?
It would be one fucking YouTube video that people would then watch 8 million times immediately.
Yeah.
And then he could, you know, and again, you know, this is the era of the security camera. You made the NSA joke earlier.
Yeah.
This is the era where I think, you know, again, later on, Rudy Giuliani, New York, okay, they had started having the Liquor Control Board and the police enforce the cabaret law in New York City. And the cabaret law said, you know, you cannot have more than, if you do not have a cabaret license, you cannot have music with more than 3 people moving rhythmically according to the music. Or the police could shut your...
What?
Yeah, wow. That's something that happened in the late 90s, early 2000s in New York City. And my friends like Murph and Spiff and all them who are in bands are still dealing with, can I get a show in my own fucking neighborhood?
You know, there's not because 2 people that are going to dance to Spiff. Like, he knows that.
But
he's all right.
But I'm saying, if you're a venue owner or if you own a bar...
That was a joke, Spiff.
It was a joke, Spiff. We love you. You're on Fallon, so it was okay.
Yeah, you're
more important than us.
Sell out.
Wait, he was
back. Oh, yeah. He was on... Spiff was on...
His voice.
His voice was on Jimmy Fallon this week.
He was a yodeler.
Yeah.
But what? Why just his voice? They were just playing.
Well, because they saw what he looked like, and were like, "We don't want this on television."
Oh,
what? No, in a bad way. I just mean, in an ugly way.
Wait, everybody! It was a bit where Jimmy Fallon goes up to the roof and starts yodeling, and then Brad Pitt is on the roof of another New York City skyscraper and yodels back. Well, the voice of Jimmy Fallon, because Jimmy Fallon couldn't yodel.
Oh, I see.
Spiff.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, so. But still, it's hard to get shows because if you own a bar or a restaurant or whatever, to book live music is then risking getting busted.
Cabaret license.
You have to have a special license in New York City.
That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous and crazy and.
Except for Williamsburg.
Well, no, it's the same. It's the same fucking problem, and so. It couldn't have happened today because I think, you know, anything that's that interesting would immediately go viral. And then would immediately, you know, and there's nothing more pathetic, I think, in our own era when you watch the TV news and they talk about shit that's cool on the internet. Like, that to me is like, that's where
gentlemen,
we are.
Yeah. Gentlemen, if I may.
What?
There is an absolute postscript to G.G. Allin that is relevant to our times.
And okay.
And that is... And hear me out here.
Okay.
That is the series/film Jackass. Now, just give me a second.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Now, Jackass, the appeal of it, and they call it Jackass, of course, it's tongue-in-cheek, mm-hmm. But you're talking about grown, quote, grown-ass men who are shitting in places and then, like, they'll... they'll go in a porta potty and have like a crane lifted up, and so that the dude who's in the crane, like, he volunteers, of course, mm-hmm. but there's,
yeah,
he gets shit dumped all over. They jump across, what, I don't know, you guys can fill this in here. They jump across, they do stunts,
yeah,
that a normal person wouldn't do. And what I'm saying is that, as Unk pointed out, that there are spectators who do not have to be involved in it. They mm-hmm. get to have mm-hmm. the enjoyment of seeing a guy. I mean, Unk said it's like a stand-up comedy routine where he goes because he thinks it's hilarious, just like yeah. Jackass. Where he goes to see it. There's been a couple times where he said he had to like stand in the back and go, whoa, I don't want to. As long as someone else is getting beaten up, is
yeah.
what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To paraphrase, he's happy. And I think Jackass is the current, or any YouTube video where someone does America's Funniest, whatever, someone else other than you,
yeah,
gets in a position that is beyond something that you're willing to ever. But that doesn't mean you don't want to see it. You want to see it yeah. happen, just not to you.
I think then, though, you could say then there's a precursor to G.G. Allin, and that's Buster Keaton.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Or Jesus Christ, yeah. you know, there's... Well, yeah, that too.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, look at that
the
guy.
The idea, no, though, is,
yeah.
okay...
I'm going to go to dinner.
Yeah, he went through
with
it.
With that, yeah.
But, you know, so yeah.
Sure,
so
Buster Keaton, of course.
Yeah,
Buster
I mean,
Keaton,
the
idea...
Charlie Chaplin. Well,
Buster
slapstick
Keaton.
Comedy
but
in general.
Jackass is, I mean, Jackass is like 10 years old at this point, though. I mean, that kind of came about before the whole YouTube thing, too. I mean, that was put together...
before the internet.
They would put things that said, don't
try
us YouTube videos, basically. Or don't send us, like...
Don't send us your own submissions.
Right.
But now YouTube exists, and that's how Daniel Tosh exists.
Okay.
Because people just put that stuff kind of through the third-party source, and then he can crowdsource crazy shit people do.
Yeah.
But
Jackass
but
is very...
before that.
He existed before that.
He meaning...
G.G. Allin.
Yeah.
Existed before that. And I think the other thing you have to say that's, I think, really important about Jackass... And I have to say, I mean, I was teaching the summer Ryan Dunn died.
There you go.
The sense of community.
Pour one out.
The sense of community and camaraderie and friendship that's through Jackass. It's not just... Because there's plenty of videos on YouTube or America's Funniest Home People videos or whatever of guys getting hit in the balls.
Absolutely.
I mean, that happens. But there was something special about the way Jackass put it together.
Yeah.
That it was about also friendship and having
Absolutely.
Sort of...
Yeah.
Virtual friendships, which is then different from G.G. Allin. That's a different monster.
Oh, yeah, I think it's...
Because G.G. was
totally
that sort of... I really want to hurt you.
But you're talking about G.G. Allin and the... I'm talking about the spectator. I'm talking about the
spectator,
person viewing it.
Yes.
I'm talking about the person...
Oh, absolutely.
I'm talking about the person who sees it happen and goes, I want to see this.
Yeah.
I'm engaging in this.
I
don't want...
From a safe distance.
From a safe distance. Which I absolutely agree with you. Which is maybe more my consumption of G.G. Allin. Like, I never got a chance to go
Unless
to a G.G.
show.
Unless you
took a shit over here
and ate it.
Your face
yeah.
On
yeah.
The
yeah. Which I never...
I've heard has happened.
No, that has not happened. No, I think that that's...
But do you think one is more valuable than the other? I mean, do you think that...
In what sense? What valuable in what sense?
So, in one sense, you have G.G. Allin who specifically says... I don't care what anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
In the Jackass sense, if you don't buy the product, they're not on next year.
Yeah.
More or less. Is one of them a sellout, and the other one is purer somehow? Or more pure, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
Well,
And I don't know the answer. Or are they both more or less the same thing?
They're very different. And
from
I think
a consumer point of view?
From a consumer point of view, from maybe an era point of view... Because I think, you know, again, me growing up, and G.G. Allin died in 93 when I was first, like, really starting to get into music and really care. And I was
9.
Yeah, and you were 9. It was the era where that sort of post-punk pretension, or that there were firm battle lines drawn. There was sort of a politics to the music that you liked. And there were certain kind of third rails... no-go spaces, black areas, where you just know you just did not like that.
African-American spaces, please.
No, not African-American spaces. Though, I will... Well, that's a different...
That was a joke.
That's a joke, but... Well, hey, there was a time when, you know, the first CD I ever bought was Living Color Vivid.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm not racist, I have a black friend.
Yeah. But at the time, being a rock fan and being into that band, it was almost like I had to know my friends better before I could say that, oh, I'm into this band and I think they're one of the most... And they were one of the most talented... They still are one of the most talented bands. You know, yeah. But you couldn't say that to certain people I knew and people I hung out with who were into music that I would talk to music about. And so there was those lines. There were those lines between this is corporate bullshit. Fuck that. Now that it's on the radio, it sucks. You know, that is now sort of the weird like hipsterism. Well, I saw them with 10 people. You know, kind of shit. There, that was very real and very important when I was a young person, and I still hold on to that a little bit. I'm not digressing. But the point I want to make is so for Gigi's era. Absolutely, what he was doing, because it was only for 90 people and he almost got arrested and everybody was scared or some people were scared, was definitely way more valuable than, oh, that's on MTV. You know what I mean?
Valuable to whom?
Valuable to, I think, the fan base. I think valuable to the...
His fan base. The 90
his fan base or that sort of alternative nation aesthetic that I grew up in. You know, whereas in 2000, yeah, I mean, things would just be kind of more friendly and we would all just kind of go to Applebee's or something, you know? You know what I mean? Like, now is... And again, it goes back to Adam's question of, could Gigi Allen happen today? I think just people are in a very different headspace now.
They are. The problem is that if you weren't one of those 90 people, unless you had it on VHS, which you do...
Yeah, and there were other Gigi Allen videos.
Sure.
But other things, products you could buy, yeah.
Unless you were there, or unless you subscribed to MTV as far as Jackass goes, it's like, how would you have, you know, how would you have known about it if it weren't for the fact that you have to have something for posterity? You have to have some sort of, I mean, all the baby boomer generation is based on, as far as 3WS, and those record sales is basically like, I was there, man. Or I bought this record as a 45 in 1959. Mm-hmm. And nobody's buying Elvis records now who doesn't know who Elvis is. Nobody's stumbling through Best Buy and going, let's see. This is Carrie Underwood. And who's this Elvis character? Let me pick this
get
up.
Get into this now. Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. You have to have some sort of nostalgia or some sort of something that's anchored into you that is context based.
I think then it's a matter of a sense of ownership. This is my thing. This is how I identify myself. And yeah, so boomers or aging, graying, fat Gen Xers like myself, you know, I was there, man, too, you know, which is kind of like our shit, you know. Soundgarden is touring again, right? You know, they should have never gave my generation money. We're gonna buy Buicks.
What's that?
And
Chester
fucking,
as the lead singer of STP now.
The guy from Linkin Park.
God,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. All that shit. Discussion. I think it is a matter of ownership, and what is different now also is that the internet has really fundamentally altered what ownership means.
Oh, yeah.
What does it mean to find something? You know, I always...
Absolutely.
Every year on Record Store Day, people, hey, man, I didn't get any copies of the Deftones re-release, you know, whatever. There was a big blow-up on the... there was a huge blow-up on the Record Store Day Facebook 1 year, 2 years ago. I didn't get the Deftones at my store. I ordered 5 copies. I didn't get any. And people were like flipping out about that. And I was just thinking to myself the whole time, just reading this fucking train wreck of comments, that, yeah, my whole youth was about going to the record store in disappointment. Like, I would go, like, oh, I'd heard
youth
of
is
something.
About disappointment in general.
Youth is about disappointment in general.
No, your youth. Specifically yours.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, you know, makes me
and
the
also,
person.
Adam and I didn't know that story. And why is that? Because we don't subscribe to the Record Day Facebook.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, you know, I just saw it, you know, and so I saw it and I looked at it and I realized, like, that's a thing now for people in the age of the internet, in the age of all this other, like, ways that we've made our lives convenient. Like, everything now is about being things being perfect and immediate, right? Most things in our lives just kind of work. They work kind of immediately, and we can get them when we want them.
But is
and
there less of a sense of ownership then? Do people feel...
I think so, absolutely. I
think
maybe,
but is that maybe a good thing?
No. No, well, or maybe I'm just a dinosaur. Maybe I'm just a fat old guy Junior. Who needs to die. You know, but...
You're thinner than you used to be, so...
I'm thinner than I'm used to be, but I'm still really fat.
You should always die as much as you always have. I'm not... Yes. I hear that. I'm talking about your weight.
Well, yeah, it's great. I can lose 30 pounds and still be really fucking fat.
Yeah, you
it's
should
awesome.
Die tomorrow,
My life is awesome.
That has nothing to do with
your weight. Hey, I'm still morbidly obese, so it could happen. But I think there's something to be said for having to struggle a little bit. Or having to find things, or maybe not having things that are so immediately
accessible. I definitely agree
and
with
I
that.
Think that's part of why. Yeah, I mean, I first saw this documentary, G.G. Allen and Murder Junkies. You know, hated 97, and I pull it out at least once a year. You know,
yeah,
it's like coming home, man. And
it's
I think
it's like your penis. It's like once a year. Let's do this. It's my birthday. Let's have a big night, and then forget about it the next day. No, I know what you're saying.
Pretty much, absolutely.
Either way, it's 10 minutes out of your life that you want to forget.
Yeah, or five maybe. But
you want a drink?
I'm good.
Give me a beer. Give me a beer. Thank you. Give me a beer, damn it. No. No. I think there's something to be said for that. I think there's something to be said for. Culture or having music that like suddenly is like, oh my god, I saw this, or oh my god, I yeah. found this. I'll never forget the first time I found the Dead Kennedys in a record store.
Yeah.
That was like, I had heard about this band.
Yeah.
And there was no opportunity for me to actually hear the band. I had to make the leap of faith and spend $14 for the CD.
Yeah.
And I took it home and it was the natural, it was the Plastic Surgery Disasters, In God We Trust combo CD, and the second song in on Plastic Surgery Disasters is called Terminal Preppy, and I just remember I heard that song, I was like, oh, what is this like? And the first song was like, okay, that was kind of good. Second song, holy shit, I listened to it 30 times in a row. It's called Terminal Preppy. It's about how college students are evil, and at the time I was in college. And I was feeling that. I was feeling like it was a song about how much jocks and those college frat boy lugheads really sucked. And I was living next door to them. And I listened to it 30 times in a row. And I was like, this is the anthem for all time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of music that I own. And there's a lot of music that I buy. And there's a lot of music that I really like. But there's not a lot of things that I can go, aah! You know, fist in the air, like I want to go spray paint these lyrics on something.
You know what I
you know what I mean?
Hate to say
and
it,
that's a different, it's a different era when you can download it and delete it, because then you can delete it because you'll get it again. You know,
yeah.
I'm used to not getting what I want.
Because of that, there's, or maybe, I don't know if it's because of it, but there's actually a lot in my opinion, there's a lot less differentiation going on than there used to be. If you ever watch those, you guys remember like Saved by the Bell and those old like stupid, horrible 90s. There's not a lot of like jock cliques anymore. I mean, okay, it happens.
We're a lot more, and I can say this.
Well, how would we know?
You,
I mean, we've been out of high school for 15 years.
Excuse me.
I do is hang out outside of high school.
Excuse me. As someone who works with young people.
And my name is Adam Rousseau. I hang out outside of high schools.
Yes. Well.
But anyways.
As someone who works with young people.
But you see my point.
I see your point. And again, this is my old man angst about the youth of today. Can I get on that? I drive a Buick. I just bought another Buick.
You're not that much older than him.
I'm a lot older than him. Physically and mentally.
Hey, it's his birthday on Tuesday.
Yeah, well, how's he going to be?
This one goes out to Adam Rousseau. 1, 2, 3... Happy birthday to you.
This is unlistenable.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Adam Rousseau. He's 32. Happy birthday to you.
Well, later next month I'll be 36, but I'm going on 70. So
I thought you were only 34.
No, I'm much older than that.
Inches.
What?
But what I'm saying is, as someone who works with the youth of today, and I get college for I work with 18-year-olds, there's a lot, there are not those lines, there are less, there are still kind of distinctions, and they can still be, I mean, I had an experience this spring.
Nobody's wearing Letterman jackets and shit. Like they,
yeah,
you know?
I think nobody is, but like, for instance, I had an experience in a class, and I shouldn't say when, I guess.
Don't say when.
Don't say when, but it was
Jennifer.
Recent. Yes, no.
This is fucking hilarious.
This is unlistenable.
The whole movie was worth just that scene.
Well, now you gotta explain the inside joke for people who all listening right. Who haven't heard, and then I'll finish my story 10 minutes later. Sorry.
So this one scene, they're interviewing one of the fans, and he's talking about this night for Gigi's birthday, actually. Wanted to have find a girl that would piss or shit in his mouth. So
as you do.
Or both.
Yeah, or both. And so this guy finds this girl and he's like, yeah, so Jennifer came over, and then he's like, oh shit. He's like, I probably shouldn't have said her name.
He goes, I fucked up.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said her name. And then they do the fucking clap thing, and then he starts over, yeah. But
yeah.
Oh my god, it was genius.
So I had this class, and there was a guy who was he was not born here. He was from the former Eastern Bloc. So he was older and he spoke English with an accent. And his values were different than your typical sort of American liberal progressive 18-year-old values. And I had a class full of students who could not handle that.
Yeah.
They couldn't handle that this guy talked English funny and was maybe a little more traditional than they were. And it was something as a classroom teacher I had to like figure out, how do I manage this? So there's still
why? What I mean, what happened?
Well, like, I mean, he would just say stuff, and people would. I mean, he would open his mouth, and people would start giggling.
But was what he was saying, not relevant?
No,
I mean,
his saying was relevant. Oh yeah, he is. I guess he's still alive, so he probably still is.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, a really smart guy, really hardworking, really interesting human being, but. The fact that he talked funny. So there still is those kind of sense of us and them.
Mm-hmm. But it's
not as strong
divided,
as...
Like,
yeah.
I wear a Letterman jacket, so I'm like...
Or I'm into this kind of music, or I'm into this...
I'm a stoner.
But so...
That's what cracks me up, the whole idea of like hipsters now. Like it's so ridiculous, because there's no like defined... what a hipster is, and people just throw out that word all the time.
It mostly has to do with facial hair, and that's why I'm upset about it, is because I can't grow a beard. Mm. So if I could, like, I'd be on board the hipster wagon, but I have a trouble with that. I mean, this is
you could just do the mustache, that's the ultimate hipster.
We have a friend of ours who is like in the some sort of world championship mustache guy. I don't know, there's some contest or something, I don't really know much about it, but he can curl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's enough length for him to hit,
do
like
a handlebar.
Yeah.
Well,
it takes a while to grow.
You think?
Yeah, it's not immediate.
I don't know.
It takes a while. You got to work on this.
I've never had a thing.
Yeah.
Well,
but
start now. But it's going to take a while. I mean, it's like your hair in your head. It's going to grow.
Yeah.
Slow rate.
I got a job, man.
Yeah. But anyway, so being with 18-year-olds, I will say.
That was Matt Eustia, by the way. Go ahead. Continue about being with 18-year-olds,
yeah.
Matt.
Well, working with 18-year-olds...
It's legal. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's totally legal.
If there's grass on the field?
Oh!
What?
Anyway.
I meant handlebar mustache. What did you think I mean?
Again, thing
John
that,
Wayne Gacy.
Thing that freaked me out about kids today is that there are almost sometimes no distinctions. Everything is always equally good. And whether that's ideas... Sometimes. Or, yeah, music. Yeah, I get hung up on that. I have a bug up my ass about music sometimes. Ooh, that sucks. But also, you know, you can... Okay, extreme example is another classroom experience I had. Where I used a piece that was actually... It was published on StereoGum.com about the Sikh temple shootings. Remember... And one of our many public shootings that we've had in the last
two
years.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had one, actually.
Yeah, we're due. Wow. Somebody check Twitter.
Yeah, no, seriously. Shit.
But, yeah, so this guy who was a neo-Nazi skinhead Nazi rock bass player went to a Sikh temple and shot up the place. And so this guy who is Sikh, named Armit Singh, who's amazing, is an amazing writer, wrote this whole thing about how, you know, and kirtan is the kind of, if you want to call it, liturgical music of Sikhs. And how it was almost sort of like, you know, going to a Sikh ceremony or worship service is like going to a show, and how it's like the music is the important part of their faith, and how this guy who was then a fan of another kind of music came and shot up the place. And, you know, basically this guy went to shoot guys in turbans, and here's a guy who...
We've all been there.
Yeah, well, oh! So he wrote this really thoughtful editorial about, you know, yeah, what it means to be a member of this minority, what it means to be the object of hatred. And so, yeah, I had responses from students. I used it in a class because I thought, oh, this is a good idea of, you know, this is thoughtful popular rhetoric. You know, I just wanted to put that out there. And my students were like, yeah, but, you know, he really demonizes the shooter. Why wasn't there anything in there that showed both sides of the story? And the other side of the story was, this guy wanted to kill people because of what they were. And there's no legitimacy there. But there was this kind of, yeah, but, you know, these the probably, I wanted to hear what that guy had to say.
But don't you think that the documentary that we just watched, in which he was like, if I weren't playing shows, I'd be murdering people.
Yeah.
The guy talks to John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah.
Certainly. Absolutely, he does not kill people, and I don't want to mince words on that. As far as the documentary goes, I doubt, you know.
He killed anyone, but
as far as his aesthetic goes or what he's preaching, the difference between him murdering anyone, and in fact, yeah, okay, you have a turban on, so I'm going to kill you, it sounds awful, but to be like, I don't give a shit what you're wearing, I want to kill you, is that somehow... better. Now the difference is he didn't do it.
Yeah, he didn't do it.
But I guess my point is that I think it's a fine line between going around making an artistic statement by saying that we are all equal. You are all equal in my hatred for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Versus I specifically hate you guys.
Yeah.
And I don't know to what extent one of them is art and the other is racism or ignorance.
It
was a question.
You want to say something?
I don't know. I'm just kind of turning it over in my head.
Aside from the fact that he did not.
Well, here's what I got to say. I mean, these are the two things about G.G. Allin, and we should move on to. We're going to do a bottom three. Instead of bottom five, because we're already way over time.
Yeah.
You know, we might even have to do a two-parter. I don't know.
Sorry. But
it's all right. I think two things. I mean, G.G. Allin is, in some ways, he's a celebration of catharsis. Just that idea of getting whatever...
Like the atomic bomb.
not quite. Whatever anger...
I'm sorry.
Is in you, out. And, yeah, I mean, there's parts of the human experience that... aren't so great, but I think need to be represented or need to be something to look at.
That's like, what was it, James Maynard Keenan from Tool, is that his name? Mm-hmm. From Tool always said, like, you have these dark things inside of you, and you can either let them, like,
fester
and have negative consequences, or you can get them out in some sort of positive way, and that's the idea behind, you know, the darkness in music, and G.G. Allin just takes that to...
To his own extreme, which is the other part about G.G. Allin is that he is an extreme character, an extreme personality who did extreme things. And I think what's interesting about him or exciting about him is that he took it as far as he did.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable.
As far as he could,
which is remarkable and amazing.
Sure.
But I think it all comes back to
John Wayne Gacy.
But that's different,
though. No, he took it as far as he could and got caught.
Well, but it's a totally different thing.
It's a totally different thing. I mean, there's...
See, that's what I'm talking about. There's a difference. About channeling energy. Both of them had this probably the same type of things going on in their minds.
Oh, absolutely.
But the one decided, well, you know what? I'm going to take this into artwork or music or whatever. And the other decided to rape and murder people and torture.
Yes. Without putting words in his mouth, I doubt G.G. Allin would agree with you. He's the guy that's just like, oh, I don't care about art. I don't give a shit about anything. What I want is my own.
But whether
that was in his intention or not, he was still doing it.
I'm with you.
Well, and I think you're confusing him being an artist versus being a philosopher.
Okay.
I think a philosopher, everything that they say, everything they do, everything that's in a book or whatever, has to be very logical and meticulous and metered and thought out. I think, though, if you're an artist, what that frees you up to do, and it's why I have academic writing I do and creative writing I do. Well, in the creative writing, it can be just the searching to express an idea, and sometimes I think clumsily expressing an idea, or clumsily creating a document of human experience. Yeah. I mean, it goes back to those cave paintings in France.
It's funny.
There are those 30,000-year-old handprints, paint handprints on a wall in France.
Absolutely.
And all that person was trying to say is, maybe I'm here, I am somebody.
And the French.
And it was a
hands.
Thing that happened. And boom, slapped it on the wall. In some ways, I think all art essentially is that gesture.
But Ted Bundy said, I am a serial killer artist. He said, I'm the first artist of serial killer. I'm not saying that, I'm not saying G.G. Allen's a serial killer. My point is that, like, there's a very interesting concept where it's like, well, you know, I celebrate things like at least in name, like hate and death and all those things,
yeah.
And you can somehow make
but those are
art
part of,
it. Of
the human experience.
Sure,
yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I think you mentioned the Joker, which
yeah,
is very Nietzschean,
yeah,
yeah,
because I can, I should, basically. Like there is a sense when it comes to G.G. Allen, although not literally, but certainly with John Wayne Gacy and Ted Bundy, where it's like, oh, I get it, and because I get it, I should be allowed to do. And Ted Bundy is the one who said, "I'm the first, or only whatever it was, serial killer artist. Like I make art out of
until someone dies."
No,
That's also what the Joker said. My art is somebody.
My art is murder.
But the difference is then you're not killing people.
No, the difference is not killing people.
So what's the fucking point? What is the point of your question?
I don't understand. What's the point of your statement?
No,
you were talking about nihilism and where the limit is.
Okay.
I'm just trying to explore that limit. The limit is if you start murdering people, right, because you think it's art, versus talking about killing yourself and not doing it.
Yeah.
Like, you have the same foundational experience, the same... You're trying to express the same fundamental idea.
Absolutely.
But you're not... To answer your question, the line is, I guess, I don't know, tying little boys up and putting them in your...
The line is not ending other people's lives.
Right.
But...
If he killed himself, they asked his brother, if he kills himself... Would he take fans with him? And he's like, I'm not answering that question.
Yeah, that's
that?
Scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you think about where that line is for us now is, well, thanks NSA. Is it the text message we sent? Is it a tweet that we send? And again, I grew up in an era where I'm going to fucking kill you, man, was just a thing that you said all the time.
In New Jersey, so...
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in New Jersey where we were always going to murder each other like 5 minutes from now.
Go Devils.
Yeah. Oh God. Anyway. So we always said that, but you can't fucking say that now. You know, it was like I was having lunch with a former colleague of mine, and we were talking about airport security. People do kill, but if you just tweet that or if you put that on social, I'm gonna fucking kill Adam Rousseau, and just joking.
I just fucking said it.
Yeah, that there is the thought that the police might show up. And there are stories of people go, oh, he said he's going to kill him. That's a threat.
There are people who do that.
There are people, and then there are people who do.
Like the Boston
but there's
Bombers.
Not,
yeah.
But there's,
and the Columbine people who
yes.
write shit down and go, I'm going to kill them. And then they do kill those people. And then
yeah,
they go,
well,
wow, in retrospect, we should have listened to that.
Yeah, well, that's our own fucked up.
That's a different issue. I'm just saying, this is not.
Well, I'm saying again how eras have maybe changed.
Absolutely, yeah. Saved by the Bell. Zach Morris, to my knowledge, didn't kill anyone, nor did he talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or A.C. Slater.
But what I'm saying is that,
although,
I think we are so
fucking
afraid and so repressed now of that other side, in a way, and the fact that everything is so immediately accessible. Like, if you want to indulge your inner G.G. Allen or that vicariousness or that catharsis, in G.G. Allen's era, that was, you know, oh, God, I got to really look for that, or I got to go to the city, or I have to find that. And now it's just like, well, I'm just going to YouTube that.
Yeah.
And I think that's different. And it makes it so much more present and immediate and accessible, but also I think it makes it so much less meaningful. but also makes it that, yeah, you could get arrested, or you could, you know.
Sure. But you were talking about your era versus the current era, where yeah. we're kind of repressed. We can't say certain things the way we used to. But in that era, you didn't have the tools to say those things the way you do now. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
There was no such thing as email. There was no such thing as yeah. Facebook.
Yeah. You know. .com.
So, I don't know. Like, what does that mean? You know, so you can still say those things the way that you could before.
Okay, the Marianas Trench that you just opened up that we could fall into.
Vaginally,
or whatever. Before we go, we're going to go to the bottom three.
All right.
Because you're now talking about my dissertation research. And my academic research.
Full circle. You've been waiting 10 episodes for this to get to this.
And we're not going to say it. I'm just going to say this about that, and then we're done. Okay, and what I will say is that because of those tools, because of the internet, because of the sense that every utterance is then permanent and universally accessible, potentially. Says the podcast guy, which I'm living it, and I, you know, we have Facebook, Twitter, Google+. You can follow us on those things. Is that our sense of public and private, which was one of the fundamental ideas of Western humanity and Western democracy, that calculation of public, private, what is public, what is private, how do we fit in those two spaces, is sort of being recalculated. And those two things have fallen in, collapsed into one another. And that, so everything is both private and public at the same time. And it's weird and it's different. And we don't know what to do about it. We don't know. We are at the experimental stage. I still think after 150 years...
If you don't want to be... If you want to have privacy, don't take part in these things that people are doing. Just fucking talk to people.
But,
get a landline and keep a diary. And then you'll live exactly the way people lived 50 years ago.
But, as Zygmunt Bauman says in Consuming Life, that would be, for most young people, and for a lot of people, that would be a form of social suicide. If you totally opted out and said, I'm not going to have a cell phone, I'm not going to have a face place... whatever, you know. And I'm someone who, all like 90% of my
anyone I know.
Yes, because 90% of all of my close friends live more than 50 miles away.
That's not why, but...
That is why. Because it sucks. Because it's, you know, all the people I really care about, 90% of the people I really care about, live really fucking far away.
I think I speak loud when I say thanks, asshole.
Well, you're part of the 10%. Jesus Christ.
He's clearly more than 10%. Look at him.
10%.
He's at least 45% of whatever it is, whatever ratio you have.
Anyway, time for the bottom three. Now, here's the thing. This
don't
is
you
the
weigh
new...
more than me at this point? What?
Pants.
This is the wrinkle of the new. So you have to decide. You have to come to a consensus on an idea.
Before you ask, so you go first. I'll go second. You go.
No,
third.
No. You have to. Well, I'm going to put out a question. You have to agree on the answer.
It's like whisper or something. I don't
know. No. You're going to have to fight through the microphone. Okay. You're gonna. I'm gonna put out an answer, and you have to decide on something. All three of these questions are about deciding on one particular thing.
Okay.
What something is, what something should be, whatever, and you have to figure out. No, this is really the right answer to this question.
I say it's the Romans, not the Jews.
Okay. Ooh.
That was the question. Sorry.
All right. Question one for the bottom three: if you had to choose, would you welcome the total elimination of day or night?
Oh, wow.
Total elimination. If the world was somehow stopped spinning and somehow you can kind of game the system or choose where you wanted to move, would you want to be on the dark side or the light side? 24 hours of daylight, 24 hours of dark night.
Yeah. I mean, the cool answer is to say I'd eliminate daytime, but...
I think we're gonna eliminate night.
Yeah,
you're gonna eliminate.
You need sunlight, or else.
I find myself depressed in the winter.
Yeah, people be depressed. Also, nothing would grow. That's another problem.
Sure. Yeah, we would run out of food.
Yeah.
Sure. But don't you find yourself depressed? I find myself depressed when.
Yeah, it's a natural.
Yeah, when it's occurrence. It gets dark at like 6 o'clock at night and. I mean, on the plus side, it's like no one can see you in your van when you're snatching people up. I guess as far as like
Jesus
great. All right.
Okay.
All right. Question two, which is worse, actually. Okay, assume this is the bad porno plot question.
There's no such thing as a bad porno
plot. Yeah. If you say you had access to a time machine. Okay, you had access to a time machine. Name a historical figure you wish you could have sex with. Like, if there was somebody you were to go back in time and say, I'd hit that, who would that be? Who would be the person, the best person to have sex with in history?
Maybe Carrie Fisher during his first Star Wars era?
James Earl Jones during the first Star Wars era. I demand you tear this ship apart. He'd say shit, though. I demand you tear this shit apart until you found these plans. Now bring me these passengers, and I want them alive. By passengers, he means
fucking Star Wars jokes.
No, no, let's go deeper than that. I'll tell you what. Let's go... How do you feel about Audrey Hepburn?
I'm trying to remember what she looks like.
Wow, okay. She's like...
go to the internet.com.
She's like Catherine, only without the shakes.
You know what?
Whatever. Go with Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
All right.
No, yeah, I hear you. Alec Baldwin, like Shadow era, like 1991, 92. The Shadow knows. Sexually. No, I know what you're... Yeah.
Okay, question
three. Let's just go with James Earl Jones.
Okay, James Earl Jones it is. Question three. What would your idea of purgatory be like?
This is it, actually. What time is it?
6:02. On a Sunday.
You're asking some atheists.
What purgatory?
Purgatory is definitely just like any office job that I've ever had. Just being there forever. Actually, no, that's kind of just hell. Purgatory would be... I don't know. What do you think?
Purgatory is having an amazing show. We just murder it, and there's like 12 people there. And none of them buy any of your records. It's like you killed.
Yeah, but you still feel good though. That's good. Actually, that was like a Club Cafe show last week. Right. There was not that many people there, but I had a great time.
That was local. But I'm saying, like, let's say you're in the middle of Missouri or somewhere.
Yeah.
You murder it, you kill it, and you can't get to your next city, not because anything you did.
No, you know what fucking purgatory is? That's when we're fucking sound checking. And nothing is working. And we can't figure out, which is almost every show, but it goes on indefinitely, where it's like, I don't know, like maybe it's our cable or what, you know. Well,
if you guys didn't have your amp so loud, this wouldn't be an
issue. Yeah, yeah. I think it might be the jack on your keyboard there.
I've been doing this for 35 years. Trust me, you don't need reverb.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I didn't have the fucking PA on. That was a problem.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. I was jerking off into the fucking mixer. I didn't know that was a problem.
So it's time now. What do you guys have to plug?
We have a lot of shit to plug, actually.
Yes.
Mm.
Butt plug? Go ahead. You should answer this.
Brett and I are in two bands, actually. I don't know if that was mentioned yet. Triggers and Chrome Baby Jesus. And Triggers is playing this Friday at Brillo Box with the Harlan Twins.
What's
the date? 27th or 28th? Wait, I can figure this out.
Last Friday in June.
So I think it's the 28th. It's Friday. You know when Friday is. And Chrome Baby Jesus is playing Saturday at the Rex with... I don't even know who else is playing.
28th is Friday, and the
29th would be...
is Saturday.
I mean, we have...
You should come out as a point, because
yeah.
as you can hear from our purgatory answer, we need some people out to our shows, so...
Yeah, for Christ's sake.
For the love of Christ, if you don't... We will go John Wayne Gacy.
Also, Brett is going to kill himself at the show on Saturday.
Well, first I'll take a dump and then eat it and then kill myself.
Well, that'll be exciting. And you guys are both working on simultaneously for both of these bands, right? New records, right?
Weirdly.
You could say we're working.
This is the first simultaneous record that we've ever done, actually.
Mm.
Yeah, so one's maybe an EP, but the other's a full length.
Yeah.
For those of you who are into vinyl.
So, and we'll have on our website links to all that good stuff, and he links to both, you know, the Bandcamp for Chrome Baby Jesus, the Triggers music, Triggers site. Check these guys out.
Good luck editing this, man.
Yeah, no, this is a fucking unlistenable train wreck.
The FBI is going to be at my house.
Yeah, absolutely.
The NSA, man.
Absolutely. So I think that's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and we'll be
who's on the next show.
I don't know. I got shit in the queue. No, I got shit in the queue. I have about the next four or five things.
Is he our first double guest?
No, Spiff was on
twice. Right,
Spiff was on twice. Yeah, yeah. So our homepage, where you'll find new episodes and old episodes, is GonnaDiePodcast.com. We're also on iTunes, of course. Follow us on Twitter at GonnaDiePodcast. And We're Gonna Die is on Facebook and Google Plus. And by the way, Brett, thanks so much for the lovely theme music.
Anytime. Yes. I'm always happy to figure out various ways that you're going to die in recording them. We'll be right back.